Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'm hungry.
Oh.
There was a debacle today, Andrew. A certain food service app was giving away a free lunch. Well, a lunch equivalent to $15.
Oh.
And so the link went around, and a dear friend of ours, Mr. Tots, sent it to me. And I thought, this is great, free lunch. I'm not turning that down. And of course, everybody did the same thing, overwhelmed the sandwich shops and the delis and the restaurants. And so I didn't get, because you know I don't eat breakfast anymore.
I was not aware. I didn't know that was that news. Should I have known?
Unnecessary calories. And so I just ordered it for lunch, and lunch came at 4:15 in the middle of the Liverpool game.
Yeah, so I saw this promotion happening today, and I was just wondering, like,
oh, it's a bad.
It was Grubhub, and I was just wondering if, like, they made this decision. Did they let everyone know? Like, were there little tiny delis around the city that were like, why do we have 10,000 orders coming through? We have two guys here.
I had to go and pick it up. Basically, yeah. I had to go and get it because they did not have enough delivery men. I went to the place and there was a woman who was surrounded by a pyramid of brown bags with receipts on them.
It felt a little bit like, a little unprepared, maybe a little.
I enjoyed this.
I mean, look, if everybody got their free meals, then it worked.
Many hours later, and you know the way bread gets soggy.
Yeah, that can happen. So you didn't get to enjoy your meal while the game was happening today. What a day, what a week, what a season. And it is now reaching its conclusion. We are in the final days, JJ, of, I mean, if you talk about storylines that we've gotten and storylines that have carried all the way through to the ultimate conclusion, this season has been riveting. And today, no exception, Liverpool and Southampton played out to a very tight 2-1 win for Liverpool, which means we will have a title race going down to the final day, which is what we all wanted to see.
Definitely. It reminded me of 18-19, where Liverpool went to Southampton and somehow, I think it was Jordan Henderson, found a late goal to win that one to keep things alive. This was different. This was a completely changed Liverpool team. 9 changes from the weekend. Almost a Liverpool Carabao Cup fourth round team. It was a diminished side in terms of not having the starters on. But Jurgen Klopp spoke in glowing terms after the game of the contribution of guys who, he said, it's almost a crime that Takumi Minamino doesn't play regularly.
And his line, he had a great line. I think he said it's like having Ferraris in the garage.
Yeah. And the Ferraris had a shaky start, but clicked into gear and did control the game largely and deserved the win in the end, although the goal was a little bit, the winning goal was a little bit fortuitous.
We'll talk about that. But while you're talking about the lineup, I just wanted to stick with that for a sec before we move into other directions. My American brain just was running wild when I saw the lineup. And like, I shouldn't go to these places and I can already feel eyes rolling as I say this, but like, a game of a hugely important game for Liverpool. A hugely important game. Hugely important game.
Mm.
Yeah. You're right. Let's argue about the fact that all of a sudden you don't care about the title race.
I communicated with a listener on Twitter who said he was surprised by the lineup. And I said, if West Ham had held on for 30 more minutes to their 2-1 lead on Sunday, you wouldn't see that lineup, and that Klopp decided that he needed to rest players for Sunday, but more importantly, for what was to come in 10 days' time.
Of course. By the way, I'm not saying he's wrong, and he knows his team, and he knows, like he said, he's got Ferraris in the garage. He can afford to do this. But I was just looking at it thinking, what if there was a hugely important World Cup qualifier and old Triple G put out a lineup like that? My computer might explode the anger.
It would go on fire.
For some reason, I just thought of that. Like a game of significant consequence. And look, I understand that Fabinho, Salah, Van Dijk are hurt. So take them out of the equation. But like Henderson, Thiago, Luis Diaz, Andy Robertson, all on the bench.
Yeah.
And only one of them came on. Henderson came on.
Yeah.
And Naby Keita, he was also on the bench. He came on too. But like, that's, I mean, look, the comparison between Greg Berhalter and Klopp isn't fair. Klopp has kind of earned.
It's not fair.
He's earned the right to make decisions like this.
Sure, but he even said it afterwards. He said, I would have taken responsibility if this hadn't gone the way it was going to go, or that it did go. And I think, but it, you have to say, it's incredible from those players. You know, it's all right. James Milner made the point about how these guys, by the way, what a night he had. Midfield, Joe Gomez gets injured, go in, plug in at right back, no problem. Like,
it's his whole, it's a whole career of that, of being a, just a Swiss Army knife.
But I think his best years have been at Liverpool. And he had some good times at City, probably was peripheral towards the end. He had good times other places, Aston Villa, Leeds, Newcastle. But honestly, I think he's been unbelievable since he came to Liverpool. But you're right, Swiss Army knife. But isn't it amazing, and a credit to that squad, and I guess to the manager and the motivation levels, to keep those guys absolutely at it? When you know week in, week out, you're not going to play. There were times when Minamino, Harvey Elliott, and Oxlade-Chamberlain, who wasn't in the squad tonight.
Well, he was on the bench. He never got in. He didn't play. Yeah.
Weren't involved in the match day squads. And still, you can call these guys up to put in those levels of performance.
Yeah, I mean, Divock Origi is kind of the living embodiment of this. Like we've always said, he never plays. But by the end of his career, he's going to put together a catalog of important goals that will rival like any of the great players of this era. It's wild.
There was a Liverpool player in the 70s called David Fairclough, and he was a super, they called him Super Sub because he'd come on, he'd score famously against Saint Etienne in the European Cup. Origi is beginning to cast a shadow on him.
While we're talking about these guys, I saw a stat today, JJ, that, you know, I take to certain statistics when they come across, and this one was beautiful. Your runaway winner this season for Premier League's most efficient player goes to Takumi Minamino.
Go on.
In all competitions this year, he had only 11 shots on target. JJ, he scored 10 goals. He's got double-digit goals on 11 total shots on target this season.
Man.
It's wild.
He did the non-celebration, Andrew.
Oh, really?
All right. Why? Did he enjoy his 3 months at Southampton that much? I was like, go off. Go mental. Go, and I know he's a reserve character, but go absolutely mental. That was a brilliant goal.
Yeah, it was.
Why not just go crazy? And Southampton, the Southampton fans didn't create that much of a bond with you, you know?
Just, yeah, that's true.
Just sometimes, cut loose.
I sometimes like that tradition. There are certain guys that take it too far. This is a good example. Like Minamino not feeling comfortable celebrating in front of a fan base that he barely even was there long enough to get to know. I mean, we always made fun of the Lampard when he scored for City against Chelsea. Not only did he not celebrate, he looked genuinely disappointed with himself.
Yeah.
Like he went home and wept after that happened.
Different gravy, though. Different scenario.
Yeah.
Very
course.
Different.
Of course. But like similar, the same category of guys who just won't do that. One interesting note about Liverpool today. So they went down a goal, and in 37 games this year, this was the 11th time that they conceded first.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's a lot.
It really is. Consider, like, if you had given me a statistic like that, I wouldn't say, okay, that team is going to pass 90 points this season. Like, that's an amazing quality that they have. It speaks to just how relentless they are in attack. Now, I say this, of those 11 games, they only won four of them, which is not terrible. There are other teams that would do less. But ultimately, this could be the thing that, like, if you point to reasons at the end of the season when the margins are this razor thin between them and Manchester City, you could look at this and point to it and say, well, while it's admirable that they have, you know, as many come from behind draws and wins as they did, only four of those were wins. And, like, you could look at that and say, well, there it is. Too many games of just having to come from behind.
You could also, if we're going to go down this road, look at games home and away to Chelsea, home and away to Tottenham. You know, you have to win those games. And I know City didn't. I mean, City lost to Tottenham. Was it home and away as well?
City took 0 points off Spurs
right.
this year. Yeah,
but
Nuno beat them.
Nuno, incredible. Yeah, I think, and also losing 1-0 to Leicester. When they look back in the
every
season,
team can do this.
Yeah, of course. You
I
can.
Mean,
I personally, if things don't go the way I want them to go on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I will still look at the head-to-head, the cup final game at the start of April and think, you had to win that one. You really did. To seize the advantage off City and then go on your run and keep winning.
Well, I'll say this about Liverpool. I mean, we can look at negative statistics and things like that, but this was posted. This is a tweet I saw from at WatchLFC before today's match. So update the numbers a little bit in your head as I read this, but to kind of put in perspective just how good they've been over the scope of this season. Like I said, before today's game, Liverpool have only lost 3 games out of 60 matches across 4 competitions in the last 10 months.
It's
ridiculous stuff.
It really is. And you just have to, as a Liverpool supporter, drink this in because it seems... It's just wild and unsustainable. You know, I say unsustainable.
Well,
they've been doing it the last few, with the exception of last season.
Right.
They've been capable
of it felt like there was going to, unsustainable is a good word to use. And last year was it. Like and even in that year, they still qualified for Champions League, you know, but that was kind of their reset button. They lost some players to injury. Maybe they needed a year of refreshing. And, like, here they're right back here again.
The points totals, the demands on teams to win a championship, to even stay in the hunt with Manchester City now, it's really something. And I have a friend. His name is Declan. He's a big Liverpool supporter. And often when things go wrong for Liverpool or a result doesn't go right, he will throw his remote control.
Oh, we've all been there.
Yeah. So he's gone through many, many remotes to the point where Best Buy are going to give him a golden remote. He's bought so many replacements off them.
Yeah.
But he texted me the other day and he was just saying, and it's so true, he goes, you can't even draw in October, really. If you want, you know, it feels that way. Probably counts for either side. You have to be perfect. And the levels of perfect that the two teams are producing, it's staggering.
You got to be perfect. You got to be a little bit lucky.
Definitely.
That is certainly part of it. We saw a little bit of that today. I don't know what's going to happen on Sunday, but should things flip, Liverpool wind up atop the table, to get a goal like the one they got today to win this game.
But they had other chances too.
I mean, you're right, but this is the one they scored on.
Yeah, it was odd.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it was a bad move. It's certainly not the weirdest goal I've seen, but the way
it... But the consequential nature of it could be so massive, and it was... Look, there's an element of... It was given to Matip. I wasn't sure if it would go down as an own goal to Walker
Well,
Peters.
It was on target. He supplied the power, but the touch off the back of Walker Peters' head creates this loop, which puts it beyond... Was it McCarthy in goal today?
Yeah.
Puts it beyond him. It was a bit bizarre. It was like... took their two heads together, the ball was between them, and you just, you know, you slapped their heads together and the ball just flew out. Weird, very weird.
Like, I almost wonder if you see a goal like that go in your City, if you're thinking maybe this is not in the stars for us. They're scoring winners like that in the second to last game of the season. Like, maybe this is Liverpool's year.
I don't know. I don't
know. I thought it was a more bizarre goal than you.
It was odd. The trajectory of the ball was funny. And strange.
Yeah, I had to see it a couple times to figure out who that exactly came off of.
It was like a weird ricochet, and the ricochet helped put it in a spot that McCarthy couldn't get to.
One other thing on this one today, Ralf Hasenhüttl said before this game that the Premier League is harder to win than the Champions League. I struggle with that. I agree with him.
Probably. You don't have to match Manchester City's record every single weekend or every match game in the Champions League. You win your group, which is usually, I mean, we're talking elite teams here.
Right.
So you finish top two, you go into the round of 16, which is, it's cup football, it's knockout football, and you have your shot at home and your shot away. So Bad teams isn't the right way to say it, but average to middling teams. Like Arsenal went to a Champions League final in 2006 mm-hmm. when they weren't even the best team in England, like not even close. Liverpool
won it
the previous year. They had to get back into the competition through almost a special dispensation.
Right.
Remember that they play all those extra qualifying games the following year to get back into it? Like that was a Liverpool team that was dragged by maybe 2 to 3 top quality players and the rest was not good. So cup competitions are easier to look out in, whereas the league probably requires a certain level of consistency. Now that said, this league is much tougher than previous years. There were years in the 90s, maybe not so much the 90s, but certainly some of the Chelsea, maybe not Chelsea. Yeah, Chelsea in 2004, 2005, and even some of United's wins in the 90s and the 2000s, and they were cruising. You felt they were cruising, and it was obvious they were far and away the best team. And challengers would come and go, but City are just so good. And
Liverpool.
And Liverpool are so relentless. Yeah. Like their streets, they're so far ahead of the rest. We used to talk about an elite top four, then it became a big six. And
The number keeps kind of moving. And right now there's a top two and sort of a bit of a mush after that.
Yeah, I would say so.
Let's go, JJ, to a trophy that was won over the weekend as we're talking about Liverpool. They win their second trophy of the season in their quest for the quadruple. Defeating Chelsea on penalties, they win the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Congrats to Liverpool on that.
It was great. It seemed like a great occasion. Full house.
Yep.
Sun was shining. Real cup final vibes.
Right down to the 0-0 scoreline.
Yeah. Although that hasn't happened as regularly as we think. But I know what you're saying. Yeah. That final feel is 0-0. It wasn't as turgid a final as...
It wasn't great.
Yeah.
There were some chances here and there. Right, I mean, look, Andy Robertson should have scored.
Definitely,
clearly.
Yeah. You never bet on him to score, do you?
Is he one of those guys?
He's like, one of the...
That's how I always felt about Moussa Sissoko with Spurs.
Again...
Never going to... I mean, he did score some goals, but like it stunned me every time it happened.
One of the best, if not... Yeah, one of the best players in the world in his position.
Sure.
Point blank range. Hits his shin, comes up back off the post. I thought Chelsea settled well into the game after... I thought Liverpool were going to blow them away in the first 20 minutes. You know, Diaz was giving Chalobah a lot of problems. And then Chelsea kind of settled into it, had some chances of their own. And had Chelsea won that game or won on penalties, it wouldn't have been a case of, they didn't deserve it. This was a game where deserve... You pack that word away.
Sure.
And it could have gone either way. And Liverpool just came out the better on penalties. Penalties that apparently they had a special neurological team come in and work on. So this Neuro 11, they were called, contacted Liverpool earlier in the year, obviously, and said, hey, we can make you better at this. Miguel Delaney tweeted this after the game. So immediately I had to look for a YouTube video. And they had a YouTube video. Now, obviously, there was no secrets given away. It was at Liverpool's training camp. It was at their facility. There was just dance music played over it. So you couldn't hear what was quite exactly what was being said. But there was Trent Alexander-Arnold. There was Mo Salah. And they were having these...
like electrodes?
Things attached to their head.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they would consult with a boffin. Let's call him a boffin.
I don't even know what that means.
Boffin is like a very clever person, a professor.
Okay.
I guess that's Irish and UK terminology. Yeah, but a very clever like scientist guy. And then they'd run off and take shots into an empty net and it would be read on a screen.
Okay.
So Klopp mentioned them after the game.
And credited them?
And credited them. No, they didn't do that much because Sadio Mane missed his penalty. A pretty weak, tired effort.
You know, when I saw that, I was like, I almost found it funny because of the penalties, the important penalties he's made for his country against Mo Salah.
Right.
And now in the moment when Salah could finally benefit from Mane making a penalty, Mane goes and misses it.
Against his fellow countrymen as well.
Found that to be a sense of irony.
Yeah, but it was a real tired effort and you thought, this is going to swing back Chelsea's way. But it did not.
I would have told Liverpool, forget Neuro 11. All you got to do is go out, sign Jesus Ferreira, and just let him hold the ball on the spot to trick the goalkeeper
each
and every time.
Penalty butler.
Right, exactly. And then the real penalty taker comes over, takes the ball from Ferreira, and we're good.
Yeah, so Noro 11, oh, just checked out, clicked on the website. Noro11.de. You know what
Denmark.
That means? No. Deutschland.
Oh.
Yeah. Typical. Yep. And who is smiling back at you when you scroll
down?
It's
a Klopp's face. He's an investor?
No.
Is he an investor?
No, he is one of the testimonial. In fact, it's all Liverpool testimonial. Dr. Niklas Hausler, Patrick Hanschicker, and Dr. Fabian Steinberg. These are the guys. And Jurgen Klopp said, the Noro 11 team has developed a highly innovative and fact-based mental strength training method that can be seamlessly integrated into our existing training program. We are now able to specifically train the mental and shot precision abilities of our players directly on the pitch. Not Andy
Robertson.
All right,
this has become an infomercial for this company, and I'm starting to feel a little grossed out.
You won't have
it,
but that was one of the things that came out of the cup final. The other thing was obviously booing. There was,
yeah,
but we'll get to that in the mailbag.
Okay. Well,
what do you mean? Don't roll your eyes.
All right, we'll get to it.
There's a cultural, political aspect to football that you
and
don't
I
want.
And I love when we go deep on politics.
It's all right. Okay, fine.
No,
we'll
no,
just
no.
ignore it. We'll just ignore it.
That's not what I said. I want to talk a little bit about Chelsea in this.
Hmm.
Where to begin? Well, I guess we'll begin with Pulisic. I thought he had a decent game.
As did I.
I suppose we're coming to find out that's in the eye of the beholder. There were not a lot of guys for Chelsea who created a whole lot in this one.
He certainly did.
Which is why I felt that he had a decent game. It didn't seem like there was a lot going on. You know, people will be disappointed that he didn't finish the opportunity that he had fairly early in the game.
Yeah.
Wasn't a great effort. Didn't get it on target. So there's that. But then shortly after that, he set up Marcus Alonso, I think it was, with the chance that Alonso probably should have finished, but took a
bad
not
touch.
A great first touch.
Alisson smothered it.
Yeah, Pulisic had another chance later that he took first time that he missed, just put wide outside the post, but it was a tough one. I don't know, I thought he had a decent game.
Adam Crafton tweeted this. Before we get to the, I was going to call them the crazies. But
well, there feels like a controversy has been brewing that I don't think is a creation of ours. People think that we obsess over this guy.
Yeah, well, I actually think we spend too much time on it.
All right, maybe that's true. But I think that something has kind of, he's become a thing at this club, and I don't think that's just in our minds.
Well, Adam Crafton tweeted this. We've had him on the podcast, very good journalist, so let's set the table with this then, and you can go to the extremes. Pulisic is a curious player, a bit of a nearly player. Does some really good things, but never feel that worried by him as an opponent and seems to lack that real killer edge. Maybe this tweet will look stupid in an hour. Now, that was in the middle of the game.
You're right. Adam Kraft, I do like him as a journalist. I just disagree with that.
Now, here's what I would say. In the context of the four games they've played this season, Carabao Cup, FA Cup, and the two league games, Pulisic particularly... at Stamford Bridge, so we'll take three games then. He has scored one goal, but he's been involved in, I would say, four really good chances. Like, big chances where he was either denied by Kevin Kelleher twice in two games, League Cup final and the Stamford Bridge game, and then Alisson at the weekend. Chances that you think, you've got to score those. Like, you really have to.
All right, that yeah.
And I think... If you're, and don't forget, many fans and supporters are big game watchers.
Mm-hmm.
They might not see him playing in I was going to say Brentford, but it's probably good they didn't see that. But, you know, they might not have seen him against another team, a smaller team, a lesser side. We always remembered the things from the big games. And in terms of the big games, he hasn't been good, in my view, in terms of his finishing. But he played well at the weekend. I think the point Adam makes is that the killer edge probably isn't there. I don't think he is an out-and-out striker. I don't think he is
a
15-goal-a-season guy.
Okay, maybe that's true. The only reason that I have a problem with that is because he can't score for other guys. And I feel like we've seen...
I'm only talking about now the chances that fall to him.
I mean, I was kind of looking... Like, to say
two point-blank saves in Stamford Bridge by Kelleher. Ones where you're like, good save by Kelleher, and then you look back and you think, God, he's hit it straight at him.
I mean, what was the game, was it last week, or I forget who it was against, where he probably should have had two assists, but Chelsea players missing opportunities that they should be scoring on his passes. Like, there was a game recently where he had four created chances, I think. He had the assist to Lukaku, and he scored a goal against Leeds.
I think you're right. I think that those things go largely unnoticed, but the big game frames conversation about
him. Yeah, he missed his opportunity to score a goal in a Champions League final. I mean, yeah, that...
I think people remember that more than the goal against Real Madrid in the semi.
Evidently, they do. Yeah. Because this narrative exists. And the reason I say he's become a thing is because I feel like there is a war that has broken out between, like, the Chelsea lifers and, I guess, the American Chelsea fans.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know who's right. I think they're both a little bit wrong. I tend to think that the Chelsea lifers have now kind of have almost shut themselves off to the good that Pulisic does because they're just too annoyed by the stuff they see from the Pulisic stands, essentially. And so that makes them, like, the Pulisic fans, I think, have been too aggressive in supporting everything he does. And that is in itself a little bit wrong. And that has then made the Chelsea fans who are tired of it, they're now wrong too because they don't even want to see the good anymore.
We've got some followers on Twitter who only want to tweet about Pulisic.
Yeah.
And will be reacting to any perceived slight from this conversation we're having right now.
I think this is pretty fair what we're saying.
I think he's an excellent player. I don't think he's a 15-goal a season player.
And also, the line there from Adam Crafton's tweet that he doesn't strike fear in opponents. Look, I mean, we'd have to take a poll of guys, but I remember the comment from Joe Gomez of Liverpool when he was asked. Granted, this is now maybe a year, 2 years ago.
Yeah, when he played at Anfield and ripped it up.
But when Joe Gomez was asked, what was it? Which player do you find most difficult to defend? And Pulisic was his answer.
Yeah.
Like, when you hear that from a defender on a great team like Liverpool, it's hard for me to then come around and say, yeah, he's not feared.
The constant search for validation, though, amongst U.S. soccer fans.
It's how we're always going to be in the sport. We're years away from losing that part of ourselves. It just is how it is.
But
we're not taken seriously by people. And so we're always going to have this chip on our shoulder.
And that little stench of desperation about it.
Sure.
And it comes across, I guess, worse on social media. And then you've got the unreasonable, as you call them, what, Chelsea lifers?
Right, like the ones that don't have, that Pulisic's just a guy.
Like, sound like
a hooligan
group from the 80s.
Like, to them, he's just a guy who's on the team, he's passing through, like, if he's not here next year, whatever. Like,
I mean, that's the prism they see most of their players through, you know, for the last 20 years almost. You know, here's another guy. Mateo Kejman, here's another guy. You know, it's always kind of being the way with them.
Yeah, so, which is sort of a transition into the next thing I want to talk about with them. JJ, they are entering this period of uncertainty where it's not entirely clear to me whether or not we can make a comment now of the good old days are gone. I don't know what Chelsea are going to be moving forward. I think we recognize that this was coming with the Abramovich situation, but you now see that sale, which we thought was done, now that's being held up because there are concerns. Roman Abramovich has been saying a lot of the right things publicly about where the proceeds of that sale are going to be going to, but privately, the ruling was that the proceeds from the sale of Chelsea have to go to charitable foundations, and that was going to be decided partially by, I guess, Abramovich, partially by the UK government. Now you're getting mixed signals on that. The BBC has an article about it. They said a senior Whitehall source revealed there was now, quote, serious concern that the oligarch was, quote, willing to let Chelsea go under over an alleged refusal to agree to a sale structure that gives ministers confidence that proceeds would go to a good cause. Another quote here. Two big sticking points remain. Where exactly the proceeds of the sale will be held and what legal guarantees government will be given about the money going to good causes. He wants to keep that money.
Yeah.
They're one of the most expensive sporting properties on earth. And that's not lost on him. And even an oligarch who's a billionaire many times over, this is not chump change for him.
Part of the reason he bought the club was in case things go wrong, I have this asset where I can put my money into and it's always there for me.
And so the combination of the complexities of this sale with Abramovich, by the way, I believe it's May 31st, if this sale's not done, there's a meeting held in early June where Premier League clubs have to essentially have their certification renewed so they can take part next season. It's unclear whether or not Chelsea will be in a position where they can be certified. And you've got guys like Marcus Alonso, Cesar Azpilicueta, they're gone. Rising talents like Rudiger appears to be leaving. The situations around Pulisic and Lukaku, big money guys that, for whatever reason, Lukaku not playing well, Pulisic not getting chances, you know, their situations are a mess. And with a new owner coming in who's, granted, extremely wealthy, but not a Russian oligarch.
No.
There's also, no way of, no, I'm not saying Chelsea won't be good again.
I think they'll still be good.
But it's hard to know if the years of assuming Chelsea will be at the top of the Premier League, the top of the Champions League, like, that they may now fall back a little bit into, you know, what Manchester United are dealing with right now.
Or what they were before.
Like, is it too much of a leap to say that they could potentially become sort of in like the Arsenal Spurs mold of what those clubs are right now? Like, still quote unquote part of the top six, but like Chelsea, it was a given. They were going to win titles. And now, like, it may not be a given in the way that it has been under these Abramovich years.
That is what we will have to divine over the next few weeks. The license, so the license expires on May 31st. So that's a key date in this. The end of this month is a key date for Chelsea Football Club. Also, the stadium, that's been a huge issue. It was a huge issue under Abramovich. They were looking at other sites. They were looking at redevelopment. What's going to happen with that now? Yeah, it's real uncertainty. And when they were bought in 2004 by Abramovich, there were these questions. You know, other fans were like, "Oh, this is, you know, it's, what was it? Financial doping, all the things we heard about." Mm-hmm. And other fans were like wishing that for this day to come, that eventually he'll have to go. They never saw it coming like this.
Right.
They thought he'd get bored of pumping money into this thing. But that wasn't the case. His hand has been forced on it. And this period of largesse and the funds available to Chelsea, you have to think that's over. The American ownership will not run it the same way. It'll be surely more like the model right now, not the Glazers, but FSG. If that's the model of American ownership, it'll be surely something more akin to that. And that's not big spending. And that has risk too, because it requires a lot of smarts and a lot of football knowledge to make sure you get the right signings. It's a weird period for
They're
the club.
At an unbelievable crossroads.
Yeah, it's a juncture we haven't seen for a club in this way. We've seen big sides relegated like Leeds and what that's done to them, but Chelsea are in a different area right now. They are not.
Right. It's rare to see the global superpower downgraded.
Yeah, and
in the way that could potentially happen here.
Yeah, and they're a functioning football club, a properly functioning football club. I mean, they are still, up until 10 days' time, they are the reigning European champions. Mm. It's a really weird position for a club, particularly in England right now, to be in.
Finally, JJ, while we're kind of talking about the title race and all that stuff, anything else from you on the FA Cup before I move off of that?
No, because we got the mailbag and we can talk about it there.
Last bit here on the top of the table, the very top of it. It was a few days ago now. I don't have a ton on it, but Manchester City and what was a pretty memorable comeback at the London Stadium against West Ham couldn't quite apply the finishing touch, got dangerously close. I'm sure Liverpool fans...
And the danger was Riyad Mahrez.
Yeah. Unable to convert a late penalty, which would have won them the title.
Guardiola's face. He was like,
all of these things just feel a little bit like Messi's face that night that Ousmane Dembele didn't convert. You can't give Liverpool an inch. They will take a mile.
Maybe this is big game bias, maybe this is watched game bias, but I wouldn't have let Mahrez near. I would have let Ederson take that before I'd let no, dead serious. Ederson's a brilliant striker of the ball. Have him come up and take it. Mahrez has, he doesn't have a great record from penalties.
I mean, I saw him convert an unbelievable, as unbelievable as a penalty can be, it was the one he converted against Spurs a couple months back.
Yeah, I suppose. But I think of him ballooning one at Anfield 3 years ago. And I also think of that miss late on in the Champions League final last year. I mean, he's a brilliant player. But it's bad. It's such a bad penalty. It was really bad. I fancy you. I think you would have. You would have.
I take a long run up.
Would you?
Yeah, I started around the halfway circle.
Oh no, but you're not a fit man.
Then I go with the Zaza,
high knees.
Yeah, into sort of a Pogba stutter step.
Oh no,
I like to do a hybrid.
You've
of
gone
all
past
of these.
The ball at this point.
I try to combine all of these into my run up.
Oh, the whole thing, and then you do the little Salah run around. Would you?
Yes, and I finish it off with a Jason Puncheon out of the stadium finish.
Then you rip your shirt off, beat your belly and go, thanks very much and good night, and run off.
But yeah, an incredible game, Manchester City and West Ham.
Mark Noble.
But, yeah.
Saying farewell.
Yeah, what a ceremony.
Yeah.
Incredible scenes. I mean, and now what happens now? Does he walk right into like the broadcast booth? It seems like he's kind of destined for it.
Do you think so?
I don't know. It
seemed, has he ever said anything interesting?
Or just like, what is a career in politeness get you? Like, he's the most polite. Like, I saw the letter that he wrote to the journalists. After they show him, he's sweeping up the dressing room.
That was at Eintracht Frankfurt, was it?
And he did it here, I think, in this last game. Like,
he's a bit
like
too good to be true.
Goody two shoes kind of thing. Like
even the haircut, you know,
yeah,
just a nice little neat side part.
Yeah,
yeah.
So this is your takeaway from a glorious West Ham career.
Wait, the funny thing about his career is we've been waiting in Ireland for him to declare for the Republic of Ireland for like 10 years.
How's that wait coming?
It's not working out.
Still waiting.
Yeah.
My takeaway from this wasn't Mark Noble. If we're going to talk about the West Ham side, I mean, Jarrett Bowen, he has asserted himself as a bona fide star this season.
First, the finish for the first goal was brilliant because I thought he'd taken it too far wide of Ederson. To get it in at that angle and to have lifted it as well to hit the side net was brilliant. Second one was good, although it went through Fernandinho's legs, which unsighted Ederson, I think. But he's been brilliant. Klopp loves him. Genuinely loves him. There's probably no room at the inn for him at the moment. Like, where would you? He'd have to be prepared to spend some time on the bench. But Rice, Bowen, West Ham will have some. Rice, Bowen, who else? Yeah, I suppose those are the two standouts, really, that West Ham will have to try to fight to keep in the summer.
Yeah. Yeah, it would definitely be those two. But Man City leave the door open just a crack. We will go down to the final day. And there will be a title.
I was
race,
willing,
all better for it.
Willing West Ham to hold on, but it just didn't seem like they kept falling further and further deeper. And yeah, at least there's a glimmer of light. I could poke through the crack. That's good.
We'll isolate that. Cut it. Future drop. I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead. We'll take a break. When we come back, let's go to the next section of the table, and we'll look at the top four as we head in to the final day of the season. This race. This top four race, man, it's been so fun. It's so ridiculous,
you know,
all of it.
You know we love quoting from the Twitter feed of John Mueller from The Athletic.
Uh-huh.
He had just a tweet that said, the top four race, and below it, a sign, Champions League sign, on the far side of a room, and a room covered with rakes.
It has felt that way. Is there one rake left? We'll find out. We'll talk more about that coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Back now on Caught Offside. JJ, before we get to the top four conversation, there was one other Liverpool note that I wanted to ask you about. So I saw yesterday that LeBron, who is just like desperate to keep himself occupied right now.
Yeah.
He just logs on Twitter, says, hey, Q&A, bring them. Let's go. And there you are.
Yeah.
as I'm looking through the various questions he's being asked. There's
minority shareholder in Liverpool, must be said.
There you are. And you ask him...
Straight up.
Straight up. You shot your shot. Any tickets for the Champions League final? Yeah. So when I saw that, first I chuckled. Then I got worried. Because your flight is booked.
Yeah.
Your hotel is booked. You're going.
Yeah.
And I was hoping at this stage you would have a ticket.
What are you talking about? I don't think I had it. Before Kiev, I didn't think I had... I'm pretty sure I didn't have a ticket. Maybe it was 3 or 4 days before I flew for Kiev in 2018. Andrew,
it's getting late early.
The prices.
Yeah. What did you think? Liverpool, Real Madrid, and Paris.
Yeah. But I mean, but each, like, I remember what Madrid was. Madrid was more expensive than 2018 in Kiev. So someone got in my DMs, category one ticket.
Okay.
$4,000. Guy from France.
Okay. You're thinking about it?
No.
Okay.
$4,000.
I was about to say, if you accepted that,
immoral.
We couldn't be friends anymore.
Immoral.
We could, if you said yes to that, it would mean that you have this whole other wealth that I wasn't aware of, that you're
four
on some other plane
grand.
Where we can't associate.
No, $4,000.
Okay, I'm almost relieved because I want to be friends.
Yeah. No, I'm going to have to figure it out another way. But like the flight didn't cost me anything.
That's true. Use points, right?
Yeah.
I mean, well, it costs you points. That's another flight you might have been able to
take. I know, but just keep swiping, baby, till you get back up there again.
That's true.
You know.
Oh, Americans and their credit cards. Americans and their credit cards.
I didn't say that. The Dutch people said that, okay? So I used the points. The Airbnb is paid for. It's done, and it's not that expensive.
Yeah.
20 minutes from the stadium as well. I can walk to the stadium. That's awesome. I don't know what I'm going to do, to be honest with you.
You'll figure it out. You're one of those guys that just always finds a way.
I'm a resourceful Johnny.
You're like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. Life finds a way.
Your favorite actor.
I love him so much. Let's talk about the top four, JJ. I didn't think anything could be more dramatic for Amazon Prime's series All or Nothing than when Poch got sacked and Jose Mourinho came in. It almost felt like it was really made for television.
It's almost like Bezos set it up.
Right. JJ, do you know who the subject is of this season's All or Nothing on Amazon Prime?
I do not.
It would be Arsenal.
Oh, good Lord.
It would be Arsenal.
All or nothing, but mostly nothing.
What will the scenes be following... I mean, take your pick. A North London derby that was a disaster for them.
A debacle.
But not so disastrous in that it was all still in their hands with a mid-table side playing for nothing ahead of them and a relegation candidate who might actually be playing for something, but nevertheless, a team under 40 points. That was what was in front of them with their arch rival hot on their heels. And they go to Newcastle and they put in a performance like that that was so bland, so lifeless. 2-0 is the final. It sent Arsenal supporters into a frenzy, which I actually understand. And I just wonder, the cameras in that locker room following that Newcastle match, what are we going to see?
Well, an angry Granit Xhaka. Because as whatever you think about him, he was clearly feeling the leadership. Because the stuff he had to say...
By the way, who was stripped of his captaincy.
Well, when I said whatever you have to say about him, that would be a good retort. If someone isn't ready for this game, stay at home. It doesn't matter the age. You can be 30, you can be 35, you can be 10, you can be 18. If you're not ready or you're nervous, stay on the bench, stay at home. Don't come here. We need people to have balls. Sorry to say that, to come here and play. We knew this game was maybe the most important for us, but with a performance like this, it is not acceptable.
He's right.
He's not the greatest vessel for this message. He could be sent off at any moment.
You're right. The funny thing about him and his relationship with the club is it seems like he's always been liked within the room. He's never really been liked, I don't think, by the fan base. I'm not an Arsenal fan, so maybe I'm speaking out of school, and Arsenal fans can check me on that if they want to.
He's the one that walked off the field, threw his jersey off, and cupped his ear at them when they were jeering him.
So It's an educated guess. But the problem with his comment is, again, if I were an Arsenal fan, that's what I want to hear. It doesn't help, but I at least want to know that feeling is in the room. But what did you do? Like, what did Granit Xhaka do in this game to help?
That's the problem. Like,
so, like, okay, these messages, fine. After the fact,
go
ahead.
Four passes to Odegaard in 90 minutes to your creative player. That's not good enough.
No. So, and look, he's one of many. But I'm just saying, like, if I a fan will read that and say, yes, we need more of that attitude in that room. But if I were, like, Bukayo Saka and saw that, I'd be like, dude, shut up.
Yeah.
You didn't help either. Like, you're putting this on all of us. Like, we didn't want this. Yeah, I don't know what the reason is that Arsenal shriveled up in this moment. I don't know. You know, they've got young players. Maybe this moment got big for them. You know, we talk all the time in sports about, you know, in basketball, for example, if a team is down 20 late in the game, sometimes they'll chip away. And I can't tell you, it's weird how many times I see a team come back from 20, tie it, and then can't get over it, and they fall back down by 8 and they wind up losing by 10 or whatever. Like, Arsenal, it took them, you know, it took them a while. I know they had a lead and then they choked it away, but like, we thought they were left for dead. They had to climb back into this. They got back, and I wonder if maybe it was a lot of energy expended trying to get back to this point, and they've just, like I said, they ran out of gas a month ago.
Yeah.
They had one last spurt left in them where they had the wins over United and Chelsea, but like, that maybe was all they had left. I don't know. I don't have a good answer it could have been so bad.
They've had key injuries as well. I mean, losing someone, a leader on the team like Tierney. I mean,
that's true.
That is going to hurt the team.
But that doesn't explain a performance like that against a mid-table team. Now, it's not fair to say that because since the first of the year, Newcastle have been a top four side. So it's not entirely fair right now to say that Newcastle is just a middling club. You know, that is not what they've been. They've been playing really well. So, all right, fine. I'll concede that Newcastle are maybe better than what their place in the table says. But for Arsenal to just generate essentially nothing, I mean, it was, I don't know, like, I'm not, I saw the reaction from their fans online. I saw it became viral, as has often been the case. Troops' reaction, I saw that online. And I'll say this, to me, after having watched that game, what it meant on the heels of what just happened to them in an embarrassing North London derby, which is the game that means more to them, especially when they're battling that team for a top four spot. Like, I get it. Like, those reactions, sometimes we've made fun of it in the past and we thought it was performative. This is a case where, like in the moment, we might look back on this and say, well, what did you expect from Arsenal this season? None of us thought they were a top four side. But in the moment, after having just lost that to Newcastle, that outrage and the way you felt that team kind of let everyone down, I get the lashing out from fans. That was brutal.
Well, I think Arsblog has the best summation of the feeling right now. He says, I'm anxious not to throw the baby out with the bathwater when trying to analyze this game, because I do see things that I like. I see a team and players I can get behind. But this morning, it's hard to look beyond last night as a huge opportunity missed. Mm-hmm. Some will see it as a failure, and I understand that. When the stakes are that high and you put in that kind of performance, whatever the mitigating circumstances, sympathy will be in short supply. It was the kind of display which raises questions and scratches old wounds, no doubt about it. This wasn't a heroic effort which just fell short. It was a horrific one which saw us fall flat on our faces. I think we've done well to get ourselves into this position, but when the pressure was on, we didn't have what it takes. Not just in terms of character, but quality depth within the squad. And that's where the focus should fall on Mikel Arteta and Edu as his role as technical director. I mean, nothing was done in January, Andrew. Yeah. You know, to bolster, to help this team.
No, the opposite, JJ.
Right.
I mean, the whole reason, like, the North London derby was supposed to have happened months ago. But Arsenal sent players out on loan so they couldn't replenish the spots of guys who got hurt. We talked about, I mean, I went off on what a joke I thought it was that game was postponed. And it wound up biting Arsenal in the ass that happened. This from Gary Neville. He tweeted, canceling that North London derby game has cost Arsenal. They had not recovered at all from Thursday. And had this loss been earlier in the season, they would have been clear of it.
I think the squad was shown up to be too thin. Ultimately, and they couldn't absorb the losses they had. They hit a slump after being in a decent run, and then suddenly they're struggling and scrambling. They come across a Tottenham team in some sort of form for the North London Derby. They lose that, and then they go and play a team which is on the ascent one way or the other. Mm-hmm. What I found interesting from that, you mentioned troops, was I went into a troops hole, which is, it's not a hole you want to be in. But Troops went viral with his a video of him screaming at the television immediately after the game, which
on Barstool,
which I didn't think was, I don't know, I clicked on the Barstool, his podcast Twitter feed, and here he is talking about the game and about Arsenal's rivals and how they, or who he perceives to be their rivals, and how he thinks they've got things locked up and Arsenal as a club are in trouble.
What are we going to do? We're stuck with this man for another couple of years. 2026. Wait, it's 3 years.
Boy,
2026.
Not a couple. It's more than a couple.
You got Ten Hag coming in the league. You've got Klopp already in the league who signed on. You've got Pep who's going to sign on. You've got Tuchel.
Who's going to be backed.
You've got Conte who's going to get backed. This could be the end of Arsenal Football Club as a top club.
Now, so that he's... Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
He's right, but he's also wrong. Like, he's living in 1998. He's talking about Chelsea as a rival. He's talking about Liverpool as a rival. Manchester United are in a mess right now, but they'll be back because they are the biggest club in the world. You know, what's he on about?
What do you mean?
The team that he has to worry about now, usurping them completely and pushing them further down the pecking order, isn't just Tottenham. It isn't just Liverpool. Look below. It's the team you played, Newcastle.
Right.
Next season, they're going to be after you. They are going to be after your spot, but and higher.
But this is essentially what he's saying, is that we Arsenal have now been passed. Like, you're right. He didn't happen to list Newcastle in there, but it's the point he's making.
But he's looking up the table. Forget about them. Those are gone. They're fit. Liverpool and Manchester City are so far in a different stratosphere to Arsenal right now, it's not even true. He has to look, it's going to be a move from below. The team you just played is a vision of the future for Arsenal and where they'll be, unless something changes.
So essentially, you agree with him.
Yeah.
They're in real jeopardy moving forward.
There's more than a few teams that are in jeopardy. A horrifying vision of the future is Newcastle, Saudi-backed Newcastle and UAE-backed Manchester City, 1-2 and 2-1 and swapping up and down at the top of that table.
But we also, like we said, we just got finished talking about how we don't know what the future is for Chelsea.
We do.
So.
True. That's fair.
But you're right. Newcastle may fill that void and Chelsea may then be kind of...
There's only so much space up there, you know? Yeah. And before you know it,
Can't wait for UEFA to add those Champions League places. Yeah. Then we can all join the party.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you, it's tight. You lose a few games, you slip away like United have, and the next thing you're looking at the Kentucky Fried Conference League.
Well, Arsenal, correct me if I'm wrong, they're guaranteed a fifth. No? Haven't?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, so...
Which, I think...
There's a different world. Like, there's an alternate universe where...
That's a good result.
For either Tottenham or Arsenal, whoever winds up fifth, there's an alternate universe where you're happy with that, with the way we thought this season could potentially go for either of those two North London clubs. I think there was a point in the season where if you made me right then and there, in like after Nuno had been sacked, Conte came in and announced his future resignation for like the sixth time. Like, if you told me right then and there, sign this document right now, you're guaranteed of a Europa League place, and that's it. I would have signed it.
Andrew.
I would have signed it. I didn't think it was...
It's disappointing from you.
Yeah. I mean, look where we are Tottenham are potentially headed.
Yeah.
It would have been a mistake, but I would have. So, and Arsenal, I'm sure there were moments for them that it might have been the same.
Like, just beat Norwich and Conte stays, right? He won't go to PSG.
Let's talk now about Tottenham. This season has been so insane for them. The roller coaster nature of this and for where it is now. And JJ, I mean, you talk about the perfect formula for the Spursiest scenario in the history of this club.
It can't happen.
But I'm just saying, I don't think it can either. But this is the formula.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they did all this work. They just beat Arsenal. And here, and then they get a gift of Arsenal losing and handing Tottenham back control of their own destiny just in time for the final week of the season against a club that's been relegated basically for since they were promoted. Like, it could, like, I saw, who was it? There's, I mean, 1,000 tweets I've seen that's basically have all said, you're not a Tottenham fan if you're not terrified right now of the situation that is in front of them. It's just them. And we quote the Chiellini line all the time. It is the history of the Tottenham. This is the ethos of the club, is to have great things in front of you.
No, it's just the way
it
things
is.
It's the way things
are. It's all right. I'm leaning into it now. I'm not fighting it anymore. It's a fun part of our history and tradition.
Look, I don't think it's going to happen. I can see why it's a terrifying vista for Tottenham fans to have.
I'm just thinking of this one, like, I could see this being 1-1 in, like, the 88th, and I'm just can't look at the screen and, like...
How much do you wish that 3 points had been collected anywhere prior to this to have it locked in?
So I was thinking about that. You were talking earlier about, you know, thinking back over the course of the season of the games that, like... potentially here we are and it got decided months ago. I was thinking about that, and yeah, Tottenham have those moments, but for Tottenham, really, I can't play that game, because for them, it's more some of the wins they had that I thought, how the F did that just happen?
Yeah, okay.
Like, their win against Man City, the 3-2.
Yeah.
That, like, I remember how I felt when Mahrez converted the penalty in the 92nd and to tie it at 2-2, and just thinking to myself, please God, like, Peter, I think it was Peter Drury on the call, and in the call of Mahrez's penalty, because there was 7 minutes of stoppage time, he says, and now City can go on and win it. No one, like, it was Tottenham hanging on for dear life, and then Kane scores.
Kulishevsky with the cross, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then Kane scores, they win that game. Leicester City, JJ.
Leicester City.
5 minutes of stoppage time. At 94 minutes and 52 seconds, yeah. Tottenham were down a goal. They won that game!
Yeah, true.
So, like, I think about their season, and I don't have... Like, they have some losses that were gut-wrenching. But, like, for them to be in this spot, I mean, they have some wins that were kind of mind-boggling. And so for all that to happen, and now it's Norwich City that lay in front of them. That's all. That's the final barrier.
And lay
to break
is what
down.
You hope. You hope they lay down. You hope they.
Well, there's a recent history here where not that anything to this extent necessarily was at stake, but remember the final day. I think it was of the season where I can't remember. I confused the two title races: the Leicester City one or the Chelsea one. Tottenham lost that title race. They still had the chance to finish second above Arsenal. Yeah, it was the Leicester City year. They hadn't finished above Arsenal in years and years and years. All they had to do was beat already relegated Newcastle.
Oh,
and what'd they lose? 5-1?
Yeah, it was.
They got pasted.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, a riot. So, like, you can't help but forget about those things. Look, in my gut, in my brain, my heart, I think that they'll do it. I think that they have players who are truly experienced in pressure situations. Kane is in great form. Son is in great form. Yeah, am I worried that Christian Romero's out for the season? Yeah, of course. Like, he's been a rock for them. It's a back line of Dyer, Davies, and Davinson Sanchez. Like, that's not necessarily the preferred back three. I think they'll do it, but you're not proper Spurs if you're not a little bit worried.
That's for sure. 96% 538 has of you finishing fourth.
Yeah.
So there you go.
The question you asked before, and then we'll move off of this.
Please, because the mediocrity is just too much.
Wow. What? This is why Liverpool. I just saw there was a, who was it? Sport Bible, one of those things. They did a poll in the wake of Pep's comments about how everyone's rooting for Liverpool. A poll of who the most hated club in the country was. Liverpool won that poll. And comments like that are why.
Oh, stop.
That's why. You asked before if what this means, potentially, this final game means for Conte. I don't know. I follow all these Tottenham accounts.
It's not good for you.
I mean, sometimes they're great. Like, you see stuff, you know, they aggregate all the Tottenham news. And so, like, it's everyone, I'm sure everybody who follows their club follows all those kinds of accounts. But, like, the back and forth of Conte, will he or won't he stay? I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, no, it's not good.
This guy is like a...
I'll never forget his windswept hair at Turf Moor, where he was like, he reminded me of Robert De Niro in Goodfellas, where he's telling them, Henry, you got to go back to your wife. But, and he does this little verbal thing where he goes, she's wild, you know, I can't have it. I can't have it. That reminded me of Conte. He's like, I can't do it anymore. I can't do it. He was just so beaten down by Spurs.
And he had only been there for like 2 months.
I thought he was going to walk out the door. And he kept talking about it. You're talking about smug. And I can't talk about mediocrity. He was basically saying, this is not my world.
Well, he tried to
turn it. My world is championships. My world is not finishing, battling for top four. It's much more than this.
But remember, he calmed down. They had that stretch where they lost to Burnley, and then they got the moment.
They got a win, and then lost again.
Right, they beat Leeds. They lost. They beat City. You think, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Then they lose to Burnley. You think, oh, F the season. Then they crush Leeds. You think, all right, that's encouraging. Then the moment that broke me, I tell you every year there's a moment where Tottenham break me. Right after that, they get bounced from the FA Cup by Middlesbrough. And it was around that time.
Dynamo Zagreb was...
That broke me, the Josie, with Mourinho. That broke me.
That broke you fully. You were...
Yeah, that broke
seriously,
me.
You needed to just get away to a beach, where like a desert island where no one could contact you.
And
you
sometimes were like the breakings happen later than others. Like the battle at the bridge, that broke me. I mean, that was just so heartbreaking to watch. But yeah,
Champions League final didn't even break you.
I mean, well, that ride was just outrageous and so fun. But yeah, I got broken this year. And look, they bounced back. But Conte, I remember he turned it on the club and said, maybe I'm not the best man for this team. Like he was trying to make it sound like he was the... He's a slippery one. Daniel Levy is going to have a hell of a time. Look, I think if they qualify for Champions League, to me, I can't envision a scenario where he's not their manager moving forward. That would be wild to me.
I think so.
But we'll see. All right, let's go ahead. We'll take another break, JJ. We'll come back. Relegation fight for the final day. A few other notes we got to talk about.
Big stories.
And a mailbag as well. So there's still a bunch more, actually, to do here on Caught Offside. Don't go anywhere. Here we are back again on Caught Offside. And now, JJ, we move to the bottom of the table. Now, this is a little trickier to do. There are various events on Thursday that will dictate relegation. Everton, Leeds, and Burnley are going to battle it out, of course, as we've been talking about, for that final spot. Or battle it out to avoid that final spot. Everton right now 36 points, a minus 20 goal differential. Leeds 35 points, a minus 38 goal differential. I mean, God love Bielsa, but that minus 38 is courtesy of him. And Burnley right now holding down that 18th spot in the table and that relegation place, 34 points and a minus 18 goal difference. Everton and Burnley both still have two games to play. While Leeds will have to wait until Sunday when they travel to Brentford.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean...
The nerves around Elland Road are very, very real, but I feel as if rescuing that point against Brighton, that might be enough. I mean, Phil Hay was writing about it in The Athletic, and he was just talking about being 1-0 down, there was... I mean, Danny Welbeck missed a sitter then to make it 2, and had that been defeat, that would have been... just apocalyptic at Elland Road.
Yeah. I mean, it kept them just out. They'd be tied with Burnley on points, but below them on goal difference. So they would be in that spot right now.
Yeah. Jesse Marsh at halftime talking about how the players didn't believe. And I told him, you just got to keep believing. I'm paraphrasing here. That's essentially what he said. Mm-hmm. Not all the players 100% believed. Marsh could do with saying a lot less of these kind of things. They just come across the wrong way. And I know it's kind of his open, almost like American view on life. But like, to me, that's not a good thing to say about your players after.
I was surprised to hear that.
Yeah, they didn't believe. And when he went on that good little run at the start that he had, then he was saying how the training methods had left the players exhausted and he came in and he tweaked things. That might be true, but you're mentioning Marcelo Bielsa's name here. Mm. A deity. And you're saying you came in and fixed it. Don't say these things. Keep it to yourself. And then the quotes, you know, the players coming out saying that he quotes Gandhi, he quotes all these people. Fine. A lot of the top coaches do that, but I shouldn't be hearing about it.
Like, well, the players are telling you.
I think it was Jack Harrison or someone mentioned it.
I mean, that's beyond his control, I guess. Yeah. I mean, boy, Everton
chaos
over the weekend.
Here's one for you, Andrew. Here's a stat.
Okay.
Opta Joe, 4. Everton v Brentford is just the fourth match in Premier League history to see a first half red card, own goal and penalty after Coventry Wimbledon in 95, Charlton Villa in 2001 and Tottenham Fulham in 2003. So that's 30 years of football and this has only happened 4 times. It was a mess.
Yeah.
And just when you thought it couldn't get any messier and this game was just coming to an end, albeit a bad end, Solomon Rondon, who has been brought in to have the ball launched at his head to try and rescue a point. 2 foots.
What's he doing? I texted you right away. I said, are you watching this right now?
It's insanity.
What was that?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was it John Bruin tweeted, one last present from Rafa. Because Rafa was the one who brought Rondon in. And Lampard just kind of gives him an old pat.
Yeah,
as he was
I know.
I mean,
look, Lampard. I don't know. Maybe. Well, yeah. I'm not even going to analyze it.
How can
what does that mean?
What can you? Maybe you can't bollock him on the sideline. I guess.
No, but yeah.
I don't know. I would be fit to rip his head off.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I mean, that happened when the 89th minute. It was very late.
Yeah.
I'd have to go back and look. Yeah, Everton. They've put their supporters through the ringer.
I think they're going to be okay. I think they're going to be okay, and I think this is going to come down to Burnley and Leeds.
Yeah, Tim Howard, I think, said it best. You know, for whatever Everton, the NBC always does a nice job kind of panning the crowd, the faces of the crowd to get sort of really the feel after a game goes full time. And you know, there was dejection in the stands among Everton supporters.
Definitely.
After that, because it kind of felt like it was within their grasp. They'd been playing a little bit better. They started to feel like we can breathe again a little. The team is responding to this lift that we've helped provide them with. We got Brentford. You know, they're having a nice season, but like this should be a game we can at least get a point from. So yeah, for it to go the way that it did, and having to battle through an early red card, still be in it, and then those 2 minutes from hell.
That said, they're playing Crystal Palace at home on Thursday. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to expect.
I don't expect that.
It's going to be more blue flares. The fans are doing their part, that's for sure. They're lighting up the road on the way to Goodison Park. I have no idea what to expect. I don't know what the mentality in the Palace dressing room would be. They're home and hosed ages ago.
Yeah, I'll feel bad for whichever fan base goes down. I'll feel bad for those fans. I got nothing against any of these supporters. But the way Everton fans have, like, they've taken this so personally. And they've made it their, like, the way they've made it their mission to try to do anything they possibly can to uplift the club.
Yeah, I mean.
And, like, be a part of this as much as fans can be. Boy, it would just sting so badly, I would think, for them to have to go through this after they've tried to really do so much. Like,
So Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, they dropped the classic line. You fear for Leeds now. Mm-hmm. And they think Burnley are more likely to get the result that
I mean, Burnley
they need.
Burnley have a match at hand, but I don't know what that means when you suck.
They're away to Villa.
Like, there's no...
Were they that bad again? I didn't see...
No, actually, no. Against Tottenham, they were actually good.
Yeah.
I mean, Tottenham won on a controversial handball in the box.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. And look, Spurs had some chances, but... Burnley might have had one of the best chances of the game. Cornet couldn't finish one-on-one with Lloris. Lloris made a great save. So, yeah, they were actually pretty good.
And they
but
have
like, none
been...
of these teams are good to the point where I would say, oh, well, Burnley have Villa. they should do something there. I don't know why. Villa look at that and say, no, we got that. Like, yeah, all these, Brentford probably think they should be beating Leeds. You know, Palace think they should beat Everton. So I don't know.
Burnley, 3 wins in their last 5.
All 3 of these teams could all lose out, and that wouldn't shock me.
And it would just stay as is.
It could, that could very well happen. The same way we've been saying all along, yeah, City and Liverpool beat everyone and it'll just end as is. Maybe that's destined to happen at the bottom of the table too. I don't know. I can't make a prediction here. I have no clue.
Okay.
I have no clue.
I won't force you.
But why? You have a feeling on this?
I don't actually. I'm just excited.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Whew. It should be fun and extremely stressful for all those involved. We'll say a prayer. Couple other notes, JJ, before we hit up the mailbag and then bounce for this week's pod. Jake Daniels becomes the first openly gay player in England since 1990.
Justin Fashanu, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Whose story, Justin Fashanu is a story unto itself.
Yeah, there's a documentary on one of the streaming platforms. I can't remember if it's Hulu or Netflix. I think it's Netflix. About Justin Fashanu and his life, and it's harrowing.
And tragic.
Extremely, yeah, very tragic, and it came to a tragic end. But I didn't see this coming, to be honest with you. And
no, why would you?
I certainly didn't see this coming from someone so young. English football has hardly, I mean, it's been a debate. Thomas Hitzlsperger came out, but that was well after he'd finished playing in England and he'd retired. It was kind of an amazingly brave thing. Sky Sports spoke to Jake Daniels in the Blackpool dressing room about his decision to come out and why he felt the need to do it. And I thought this was quite interesting.
Did you feel as though you might need to hide who you are to become a professional footballer?
Yeah, I think so, obviously, because there's no one out. Felt like I do need to hide it and wait until I've retired to maybe come out. But I just knew that that's just such a long time of just lying and not being able to have what I want.
Yeah.
Boy, it's a lot for a 17-year-old to shoulder.
But like, he's looking ahead and he's seeing, I can't do this.
Right. That if he's 17 years old, he's a professional footballer. Presumably he wants a family. But like, bare minimum, he doesn't want to have to live a lie around his teammates in a locker room for the next, I don't know, 15, 20 years. Like, who knows how long his career might be. So
it was interesting that, you know, he said.
And by the way, hearing that, your heart breaks for all of the gay soccer players that have not and have chosen to forego having a family and been someone that they're not. Truly, can never really feel like they're themselves around their teammates, and went an entire career doing that.
And Jake Daniels did say that one. I mean, he repeated it throughout the interview, which is on Sky Sports on YouTube. That if it helps anyone to come out, then he kind of almost wants more people than like that. He can create something and start something, and then right. Normalize what is a normal thing anyway, but hasn't been normal in football. Unbelievably brave, and like he's just signed professional contract. He only made his league debut this season, although he scored something like 40 goals in the youth ranks. So he's like clearly a player that's of some worth and value and is on the rise. And then to have this almost cross to bear, and in an environment which he clearly thinks. It's a problem keeping this quiet. It's a problem there aren't enough gay players in football. And for him right. to do it was just a brave act.
Yeah. You hope that English football can get to a place where like this year, JJ, in the NFL, I thought it was a great sign for where American society is at that Carl Nassib of the Oakland Raiders or Las Vegas Raiders came out. And it didn't feel like a big deal.
No.
I don't mean that to trivialize what that moment was for him. I mean that to say like there's like a normalization has occurred where it's kind of like, oh, okay, I guess he's gay. Like, all right.
Yeah.
And we all kind of go on with our day. Like there's no I didn't see outrage. I didn't like it. Just he's a guy on the team, and like that's it. Like you kind of want it to just be a like a normal thing that it isn't. You know, it's
yeah. And Jake Daniels spoke about. He was asked kind of, well, you know, why is it a problem for people to come out in this environment of football? And he kind of talked about the hyper masculine environment and that. Still in the society of football and probably in broader society too, gayness is seen in some way as equal to weakness. And he said that's just simply not true. And football has not been an environment in which you could express those feelings and those thoughts. And so it's brilliant. Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher spoke about it on Monday Night Football and said it was just such a watershed moment for English football. I really hope that it is.
Oh yeah.
It would appear it's not. it's got a long way. The movement obviously has a long way to go. In terms of European football, when we see that Idrissa Gueye faced criticism after he missed a game rather than wear a shirt designed to support an anti-homophobia initiative, he skipped the same game last year. And that's a report.
Boy, that's disappointing.
That's a report from Tariq Panja. In the New York Times. So it just kind of goes to show you
why players choose to stay quiet.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
But this is a great thing to happen.
Yeah. I agree. And I hope it's received that way. I would love, you know, I'm curious to see the next time he plays, and you hope that there's an ovation, you hope that it's received positively.
And then it's completely forgotten about,
right?
Because it's his private life.
Right.
And he should be able to say and be the man he wants to be in his private life, and he should be able to be the footballer and pursue the career he wants in his professional life.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. We continue, JJ. The championship playoffs. We have our final.
Yes. Huddersfield are into the championship playoff final, and they will be joined by Nottingham Forest. Bryce Samba saving three penalties to send Forest to the playoff final. It was 2-1 on the night to Sheffield United. Morgan Gibbs-White and John Fleck with the goals for Sheffield United. The very talented youngster Brennan Johnson with the goal for Nottingham Forest. Bryce Samba now just cementing his place at Nottingham Forest with those penalty saves. And so it's going to be Forest and Huddersfield in the playoff final, which... You've basically pinned your colours to the mast. You have no interest in Huddersfield coming back up.
I mean, easy.
No.
I mean, look, their time in the Premier League was unspectacular.
They were like a fog that came in briefly and left.
Yeah, it'd be, you know, Forest are kind of like
a story
historic
team. Yeah.
Club. What a season for them. So when they appointed Steve Cooper as their manager, 8 games into the season, they were last in the table, 4 points. Since his debut on September 21st, no other team has won more points than Steve Cooper's side. 76 points, more than Fulham, even, who were champions.
Yeah.
What an insane turnaround.
And so many false dawns for this club since they went down, like, what, over 20 years ago. Just, we don't have enough time on this podcast to list all their managers since then. You know, they've tried everything. From bringing back people like former players like Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane recently to... You know, young and upcoming managers, Chris Hughton, anybody they could think of, like to try and revive this team. And Cooper's done an unbelievable job, just a brilliant job.
We should mention in the jubilation, there was a little bit of negativity.
A large bit.
Pitch invasion after the win from the Nottingham Forest fans. They went wild. But among that joy, Billy Sharp of Sheffield United was attacked.
He was headbutted.
Yeah.
Sheffield United's official Twitter, it's assault. This is a quote from their manager, Paul Heckenbotham. It's assault. We've seen one of our players attacked. He's shook up, bleeding, angry. It'll be dealt with. It's upsetting for a lot of reasons. I don't want to say too much more about it. He'll be dealt with. Awful. Just awful.
Yeah.
And...
So dumb.
Yeah,
so
but it's going to ruin it for everyone. One of the great things, one of the great like images, and I'm sure a great thing to be part of from English football is the pitch invasion when you either stay up on the last day, like in 2005.
Yeah, West Brom is West always Brom, one.
An amazing one. But if you're going to have idiots who can't come on the field and behave themselves, then, I mean, it's just... And we saw it earlier in the Cup, the Leicester City fan who ran on and attacked the Nottingham Forest players. Right. So this is happening far too much.
Yeah, it just happened at Stuttgart. I don't remember hearing any violence that came from that, but those scenes of that pitch invasion were out of this world.
Yeah,
incredible.
Amazing.
American manager, by the way.
Yeah.
Pellegrino Matarazzo.
That's right, yeah.
Wayne, New Jersey's own.
Fountains of Wayne. I was near Wayne the other day. Couldn't be more Jersey.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
It's nice though, Wayne, New Jersey.
Yeah, I like all the Jersey townships.
Sure. All right.
I can list a lot if you want me to.
Yeah, let's see how long you can go.
No, let's not do that.
Mailbag, or do you have more?
Yeah, no, that's it. Hopefully, fingers crossed. I know you have your fingers crossed for Nottingham Forest, Andrew. You're pretty angry about Huddersfield.
That's not true. That is honestly not true.
CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com. CaughtOffsideESPN on Instagram. Follow us there. @COSoccerPod. @COSoccerPod on Twitter. We asked a couple of pods ago about soccer memorabilia you'd love to own. So I went to the animals straight away.
Nice.
Asset24. The shoe Sir Alex Ferguson kicked that cut Beckham's forehead, or the pizza must have fungus on it now. I mean, that Fabregas threw at Sir Alex Ferguson on the delightful night when we ended Arsenal's unbeaten run in 2004. Pizzagate, one of the classic games, which wasn't even that great of a game, but what happened in the tunnel was legendary. Casual fan. On a serious note, the match-worn jersey from Messi when he scored the winning goal in the 92nd minute in El Clasico in April 2017. To add to it, it was his 500th career goal. Yeah, that would be an amazing
pretty
one.
Pretty good.
On a less serious note, I actually think this is very serious, the three envelopes used by Brendan Rodgers in the Being Liverpool documentary.
Amazing.
Oh!
That's a great call.
That is a brilliant call.
Or even just the self-portrait of him would be a great one to have.
Oh, remember how we mocked it? Can I circle back?
Sure.
I think that was done by a charity, this amazingly talented disabled artist who did it for Rodgers, and he put it up. That changes it for me.
No. I'm not mocking the picture. It was really well done. They did a great job.
You're mocking that he hangs it.
It's just weird to hang a painted self-portrait
that's
of yourself.
That's what I want.
What are you, like your Royal Highness?
That's
like
what I want. If we ever get our own studio, like where we can completely dominate the walls, uh-huh, we have to get a remake of that. But with your head on it. Oh, yeah.
I feel so uncomfortable. Anytime anyone would come in the studio, like they want to tour it, see what it looks like or whatever, like, oh, wow, Andrew's really got a big opinion of himself. Yeah. Self-portrait.
Robert, big question. On the 20th anniversary of the Saipan incident involving Roy Keane and then-Ireland manager Mick McCarthy, which resulted in Keane exiting the national team before the 2002 World Cup, how does JJ look back at the whole situation as a wise, mature man? The Cliff Notes.
Yeah, tell me about this. I mean, obviously, I know the falling out, and I know what it meant for the World Cup, but the details of why the fallout occurred, I'm fuzzy on it. Educate me.
So they landed. Saipan was an island in the Pacific, which had been a battleground actually between the Japanese and the Americans during World War II.
Okay,
and it was chosen by Mick McCarthy and the FAI to be a training base before you go to the official base that FIFA give you on the mainland of Japan or South Korea.
Okay.
So this was a couple of weeks before the World Cup. They flew out there and Roy Keane was there. He was struggling with an injury, but he was, you know, he was ready to go. They turn up. The field that they were supposed to train on was worse than a high school field. Keane described it as a car park. The special drinks they needed to acclimatise hadn't arrived. There was no balls and there was no medical gear for their first training session.
Okay.
So some of the guys had to train. Now this is 2002, not 1902. Some of the guys had to train in like the polo shirts and stuff that they were given. Like they had no proper training gear. So that set Keane off. There was an argument then at training with the goalkeepers. It all kind of was brewing. Keane was not happy with the facilities. He gave an interview then about that. And then he'd had enough and he said he was leaving. And McCarthy said, okay. So he called up Colin Healy to come out because you have a replacement player. And then Keane changed his mind and said he was staying, mm-hmm, while Colin Healy was on his way out. So McCarthy goes, okay, all right, okay. Everything was supposed to have been sorted, but the interview that Keane gave was then printed in the Irish Times. Mick McCarthy called a meeting at which he allegedly accused Roy Keane of feigning injury to miss matches in the qualification campaign. There was a back and forth, a very verbal altercation. Keane stormed out and left, and then left and did not come back.
And didn't the Prime Minister get involved?
The Prime Minister got involved.
Yeah.
He tried to, he offered the, he tried to inter, because he's a Man United fan, Bertie Ahern was his name. He tried to get involved as a mediator. Sir Alex Ferguson was involved.
Unbelievable.
It was, there was an election in Ireland. Back page news was the election. Front page was this. Keane went on with Tommy Gorman on the RTE News, Ireland's national broadcaster, did a 40-minute interview, sit-down, like special, like with Keane and Tommy Gorman, one of its top reporters, to talk about him coming back.
In hindsight,
yes,
who was right, who was wrong?
There was wrong on both sides.
Okay.
Mick, who I think is a good guy, got it wrong. You can't send a team out like that and not be properly prepared. That was wrong. But I think Keane should have bottled all that up, said, we're only here for a week. Then we go to our main training ground, which is going to be top class. Right. This is my last probable World Cup at the level I'm at. I'm the captain of Manchester United, the captain of my country.
Yeah.
Just suck it all up.
That's the problem I have is, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm trying to remember now, Ireland got out of the group.
Got out of the group.
So that was not just like a team that was happy to be there.
The only team to score on Germany until Brazil did in the final were
so
us.
So for me, putting all of these pieces together, you're right, McCart, like there were flaws.
Yeah.
But like, boy, you're the best player on a team that could really do damage in a country that doesn't often do it. That is such a selfish move. I'm sorry. That is just so damn selfish.
I think he should have bottled it all up. His frame of mind clearly wasn't right. Maybe he was doubting. He had beginning to have real problems with his hip. But suck it up for the month. We only lost to Spain on penalties.
Right. Like looking back on it, if you could talk to Roy Keane, would you say, so was it worth it? Whatever the statement was that you were trying to make.
So there's no movement.
Was it worth it?
There's no movement on him right
now. I don't know. Look, then he feels how he feels. Maybe he genuinely believes, yes, it was worth it. I made my point. But like, to what end?
We went out in the round of 16 and you saw what the US did. Like they could have beaten Germany, apart from the handball on the line.
Controversial decision. Yeah.
And you look what South Korea did in that tournament. Mm-hmm. Like that wasn't an outstanding tournament. We could have gone on a little run. Instead, we went out on penalties.
And you still kind of did.
Yeah.
But you're right. Maybe there was another round still to go. Who knows?
Just suck it up and get on with it. Miles Costello, is it fair to say... Why am I saying it like that? It's Miles Costello. Is it fair to say that... I went all American there. Is it fair to say that Nottingham Forest has a similar pedigree to Everton? I would say no. I would say Forest have been outside the Premier League for 20 years, so I don't think he can say similar pedigree. In terms of leagues won, Everton have 9, the fourth most behind Arsenal, Liverpool and United. When it comes to European competition, Forest can claim supremacy though. They have 2 European Cups won back to back in 79 and 80 under Brian Clough. Everton only have the European Cup Winners' Cup, which they won in 85 against Rapid Vienna in Rotterdam. So I would say Everton overall have a... I mean, we're grading pedigrees here. Mm. Forest are a huge club, and if they come back up, it'll be where they belong in top flight football, I would think. But yeah, I would say Everton edge it because they have more leagues won. Heat in 5, Craig Bino. Hello, first time, long time. My question is for JJ. Liverpool fans booing the national anthem, based or incredibly based? I'll hang up and listen. So the main furore coming out of the FA Cup final was not really the result of the game. It was the reaction to Liverpool fans booing the God Save the Queen and the national anthem.
So Klopp was asked about it afterwards.
Yeah.
And he did a good job navigating a tricky one.
Mm.
And he basically said, I think in a situation like this, we have to ask, why are they booing?
Yeah.
And so, okay, yeah, why?
first of all, it's an opportunity for Liverpool fans to show their dissent against the establishment and against the people they have seen or they believe have done them wrong, from the Tory government of the 1980s, the managed decline of the city where it was let go to rack and ruin and was basically going to be deprived of essential services. They're saying, we can't do anything with these people. Secondly, it's from a sense of Irishness, a sense of not being, maybe not Irishness, but a sense of not being English.
I didn't know that was a feeling that existed among
Liverpool. I mean, not all Liverpool people consider themselves, I mean, there's a famous Liverpool banner, Scouse, not English. They consider themselves apart from the concept of England and English nationalism. And I should circle back. One of the main reasons is the way that the ruling government, the establishment, and Her Majesty's police dealt with the aftermath of the Hillsborough disaster, where they lied and worked with the establishment at the time, who were Tories and who would be seen as royalists or those who would support Queen and country, King and country. And they want no part of that, and that's why they boo. Now,
interesting.
For a longer, more in-depth analysis of this, our friend Tony Evans from The Independent has a piece, so you can see that. I'll post it on Twitter. But the booing started, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, during Abide With Me, which is the hymn that's always been sung at the FA Cup final. And I objected to that because I like that tradition. And that song features on a Hillsborough fundraising album, or a Hillsborough memorial album, Abide With Me, because it's a beautiful song. And it's tradition, and it actually makes me, you know, I like it. It's emotional. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see the need to boo that. But to boo the head of a country that has treated you and your region in such a fashion, I didn't see anything wrong with that.
Interesting. Okay.
And a lot of it was whipped up by the Daily Mail, who said, anger as Liverpool Cup final fans boo William. MPs condemn shameful abuse hurled at Prince when he shook players' hands. Look, that's just the way it is. I think there's worse things that have happened.
I'm sure.
But that was the main Ferrari there. Let me see. Is that it? Oh.
One more here, yeah.
One more. Do you like this one, Andrew?
Yeah, actually I do.
Jose Boga, listening to the Southampton-Liverpool game on BBC Radio. Amazing how exciting just the audio can be and the skill of the commentator. When did you last listen to an EPL game on radio? I would say it was before I moved out here. Today FM in Ireland used to do live, they'd have a live match. And if you were in the car driving, it was outstanding. It paints a picture.
Yeah, so I have a couple of these.
Okay.
There's two that strike me that I listen to. One was a 2 years ago, I think, or either last year or 2 years ago, a League Cup match between Tottenham. I forget who they were playing, but Ben Davies scored. So any Tottenham fan listening will remember that, because he never scores goals. So it was the goal he scored from like 20 yards out on a screamer. It was amazing. So I listened to that. And then once, when I was on vacation in the Dominican Republic, I listened to the Tottenham fans, the famous Tottenham-Chelsea game, when it was really the game when Harry Kane became Harry Kane.
Right.
And I remember thinking that the radio call, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
But it's almost unrepresentative, in that I almost felt like I was listening to the call of a hockey game. Like the tone of the broadcast is a lot more edge of your seat than if you're watching it on TV, where they need to, like on television, if the ball is kind of just like being passed sort of around the 18-yard box, you can see that. You don't really need the announcer to like build the tension for you. You can choose to build it however you want. But on radio, you can't see it. And like the way their voice kind of like crescendos when like action isn't necessarily happening, they're just kind of near the goal. I found that to be different.
Okay.
Than the television viewing experience.
Yeah, I
felt like they call it with a little bit more like something's about to happen.
Well, both of us love audio and, you know, that medium. And it really works for soccer. It really does. Now, you need to have a good commentator, obviously. You need to have very good or an appropriate amount of background sound. Because sometimes in the radio games, it's really good when there's a lull and you can hear the shouting and the roar and the pitch of the crowd. It's great. I agree with them. Yeah. I agree with our listener. It's the last time would have been, I can't remember what game it was, because there was a game every Saturday on Today FM and I would listen to it in the car. It was, plus blackout games, all those 3 o'clocks were blackout. So it's either that or be at home on Sky Sports News watching Matthew Letissier, Paul Merson and Charlie Nichols with the headsets.
Uh-huh.
And they just...
They're kind of phoning in updates. I've seen that. It's wild.
Yeah, like it can be good. There's been a goal at Sheffield United, but for who? Chris Kamara. He go, unbelievable, Jeff. Uh-huh. You know, and it became a... But, I mean, that's good on its own, I guess. But I really enjoyed the radio too.
Last one, that this wasn't necessarily specific to us, but I saw this and I wanted to kind of shoehorn it in before we get out, because I found it interesting. Look, as we go through the next few months, you'll find that the World Cup is never going to be far from my mind. I just can't help it. How I'm wired. And so I saw this from USMNT Thoughts.
Why don't you give him a segment?
So he,
he writes. Yeah, I'm being replaced, guys.
The Bundesliga season is over. I'm curious, who do you guys think was the highest rated American on average season long? Hint: he also played the most minutes, and this was according to FootMob, by the way. So okay. A site that like grades players. You can take it or leave it, but like that's what they do. Would you be surprised to know, JJ, that the highest rated American in Germany this season was John Brooks?
I wouldn't.
Now, I don't know what that says.
What does that mean? Highest rated?
What it doesn't necessarily mean is that John Brooks had a better season than what we kind of thought from the way that he's been perceived from the American camp. It might mean that. It doesn't necessarily mean that. What it probably means is that the Americans playing in Germany either A, were hurt, like Gio Reyna, or B, did not have good seasons.
Correct.
Now, it might be a little bit of all of these things. Maybe John Brooks was a little bit better than whatever we were thinking over here.
If you look at the stats for Tyler Adams, who you would expect to be heading that poll.
Right.
35%. Of the time, it was only 35% of the time he's in the starting 11. 44% of the minutes, so less than half of the minutes for RB Leipzig, and 1% of the goal participation.
Which is not necessarily what he's there to do, so that last number doesn't faze me all that much. But the other two...
It's not great.
But the other
two
are
noticeable.
It's
not a lot of time on the field. It's not entirely his fault. He's had issues as well, you know. But yeah.
Brooks, the USMNT Thoughts, they write, he had a 7 average rating over the course of the season and played every game for a mid-table finisher. I agree it hasn't been the best season for Yanks abroad, but that shouldn't discount when someone did have a solid year, and Brooks did. Not spectacular, but solid.
And it's worth, I think it's worth, you know, factoring in that some of his meltdowns we saw in the Champions League group stage. So he might have been puttering along just fine in Germany, and then I think it was against Lille he got taken to the cleaners.
And
you see it and you remember it.
Right.
You mightn't have seen how he played.
Right. Did we watch the game against Augsburg?
Maybe not.
No.
Well, we might have tuned in for the Augsburg game.
That's a bad example.
Yeah.
But anyway, so there you go. That was a podcast. I believe we're going to be back on Sunday with a special bonus edition. With the season having wrapped up, we'll give you immediate thoughts. We're going to have a lot of them because everything that we've been talking about for the last 10 months or so will finally have reached its conclusion. So I'm nervous. I can't wait. So we'll have one for you Sunday. We'll have a Devundlings at some point next week. And then at the end of the week, we'll have a Champions League final preview. You'll be live. Well, nothing on podcast is necessarily live, but you'll be in Paris.
I will be in Gay Paris.
So we got a 3-pod week coming up for you.
God.
And all of them worthwhile. Like I don't know any other way to do this than to do it like that.
And all of them brought to you by Grubhub.
So there you go. Man, what a show this was. I enjoyed it immensely. JJ, should be a fun final few days here. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care, man.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.